Chapter 11, Biotechnology Principles and Processes. Biotechnology deals with techniques of using live organisms or enzymes from organisms to produce products and processes useful to humans. In this sense, making curd, bread, or wine, which are all microbe-mediated processes, could also be thought as a form of biotechnology. However, it is used in a restricted sense today to refer to such of those processes which use genetically modified organisms to achieve the same on a large scale. Further, many other processes or techniques are also included under biotechnology. For example, in vitro fertilization leading to test tube baby, synthesizing a gene and using it, developing a DNA vaccine, or correcting a defective gene are all part of biotechnology. So what we learned in biotechnology until now is making curd, making bread, making wine, and then in vitro fertilization, and then synthesizing a gene, and developing a DNA vaccine. What is a DNA vaccine? I don't know. Correcting a defective gene. They all come under biotechnology. The European Federation of Biotechnology, that is EFB, European Federation of Biotechnology, has given a definition of biotechnology that encompasses both traditional view and modern molecular biotechnology. Okay, traditional also and modern molecular biotechnology also. The definition given by EFB is as follows: the integration of natural science and organisms, cells, parts thereof, and molecular analogs for products and services. Okay, it's a biotechnology is the integration of natural science and organisms, cells, parts thereof, and molecular analogs for products and services. So result is products and services, and integration of natural science, organisms, cells, and all those parts, and molecular analogs. Okay, done. Then principles of biotechnology. Among many, the two core techniques that enable birth of modern biotechnology are, okay, the two core techniques that enable the birth of modern biotechnology, they are genetic engineering. So what comes under genetic engineering is techniques to alter the chemistry of genetic material. Techniques to alter the chemistry of genetic material, that is RNA and DNA, to introduce these into host organisms and thus create the phenotype of the host organism. So basically, alter the chemistry of genetic material, first step. Now, this is what comes with genetic engineering, okay? First is alter the chemistry of genetic material, okay? Now, introduce that altered genetic material into a host organism, and then look for the changes in the phenotype of the host organism, okay? So, the result should be change in the phenotype of the host organism. Then comes second core technique comes as maintenance of sterile ambience. That is sterile meaning it should be free of microbial contamination. Okay, so maintenance of sterile ambience in chemical engineering processes to enable growth of only the desired microbe or eukaryotic cell in a large quantity for the manufacture of biotechnological products like antibiotics, vaccines, and enzymes. Okay, so maintenance of sterile microbial contamination free ambience in chemical engineering processes to enable growth of only the desired microbe, okay, either microbe or the eukaryotic cell. Okay, maybe microbe is like a prokaryote, maybe that's what they mean. Okay, so desired microbe or eukaryotic cell in a large quantity for the manufacture of biotechnological products like antibiotics, vaccines, and enzymes. Let us now understand the conceptual development of the principle of genetic engineering. You probably appreciate the advantages of sexual reproduction over asexual reproduction. The former provides opportunities for variations and formulation of unique combinations of genetic setup, some of which may be beneficial to the organism as well as the population. Asexual reproduction preserves the genetic information while sexual reproduction permits variations. Traditional hybridization procedures used in plants and animal breeding very often lead to inclusion and multiplication of undesirable genes along with the desired genes. The technique of genetic engineering, which include creation of recombinant DNA, use of gene cloning, and gene transfer, overcome this limitation and allow us to isolate and introduce only one or a set of desirable genes without introducing undesirable genes into the target organisms. Okay, so The techniques of genetic engineering, which include creation of recombinant DNA, use of genetic cloning, and transfer of gene, it overcomes the earlier limitation, that is the limitation of traditional hybridization, which led to inclusion and multiplication of undesirable gene along with the desired gene. Okay, easy peasy. So it allows us to isolate and introduce only the set of desired gene without introducing the undesired gene into the target organism. Okay, done. Do you know the likely fate of a piece of DNA which is somehow transferred into an alien organism? Most likely, this piece of DNA would not be able to multiply itself in the progeny cells of the organism. But when it gets integrated into the genome of the recipient, it may multiply and be inherited along with the host DNA. This is because the alien piece of DNA has become a part of the chromosome of the, you know, the host, which has the ability to replicate. In a chromosome, there is a specific DNA sequence called the origin of replication, which is responsible for initiating replication. So the ori is responsible for initiating replication, and ori is a part of the chromosome. Therefore, for multiplication of any alien piece of DNA in an organism, it needs to be a part of a chromosome, which has a specific sequence known as origin of replication. Okay, so not any other chromosome, just the chromosome which has a specific sequence known as the origin of replication, like a plastid has origin of replication. Okay, thus what we get to know is an alien DNA is linked with the origin of replication so that the alien piece of DNA can replicate and multiply itself in the host organism. This can also be called as cloning. So an alien DNA, it's linked with the origin of replication. So the alien piece of DNA can replicate, and it can replicate and multiply along with the host organism's chromosome. Okay, this can also be called as cloning, or making multiple identical copies of a template DNA. Okay, so the piece of DNA that got attached to it is now known as a template DNA. That's also a thing to remember. Done. First instance of the construction of an artificial recombinant DNA molecule. The construction of the first recombinant DNA emerged from the possibility of linking a gene encoding antibiotic resistance with a native plasmid, that is, autonomously replicating circular extrachromosomal DNA of Salmonella typhi murium. Stanley Cohen and Herbert Boyer accomplished this in 1972 by isolating the antibiotic resistance gene by cutting out a piece of DNA from a plasmid which was responsible for conferring antibiotic resistance. The cutting of DNA at specific locations became possible with the discovery of the so-called molecular scissors, that is, restriction enzyme. The cut piece of DNA was then linked with the plasmid DNA. These plasmid DNA act as vector to transfer the piece of DNA attached to it. You probably know that mosquito acts as a vector for transferring the malarial parasites into human body. In the same way, a plasmid can be used as vector to deliver an alien piece of DNA into the host organisms. The linking of antibiotic resistance gene with the plasmid vector became possible with the enzyme DNA ligase. Okay, so linking of antibiotic resistance gene with the plasmid, that is, plasmid vector, it became possible with the enzyme, that is, DNA ligase, which acts on cutting DNA molecule. Okay, so DNA ligase acts on cut DNA molecule and joins their ends. This makes a new combination of circular autonomously replicating DNA created in vitro and is known as recombinant DNA. When this DNA is transferred into Escherichia coli, a bacterium closely related to Salmonella, it could replicate using the new host DNA polymerase. Okay, so bacterium that is closely related to Salmonella typhi murium, we're talking about. Okay? It could replicate using new host, meaning the E. coli's DNA polymerase enzyme, and make multiple copies. The ability to multiply copies of an antibiotic resistant gene E. coli was called cloning. Of antibiotic resistance gene in E. coli. The ability to multiply copies of antibiotic resistance gene in E. coli was called cloning of antibiotic resistance gene in E. coli. You can hence infer that there are the three basic steps in genetic modification: identification of DNA with desirable genes. Okay, so you identify an organism that has a desired gene and you take it out of that organism, like that part of the DNA, you take it out. Okay, then introduction of the identified DNA into the host. Okay, now how you're going to put it in the host is with the help of a vector. Okay, now you got to take a similar bacteria or something and take a plasmid out of it. I mean, anything as a vector out of it. Now this is for bacterium, okay? This is for plasmid, is for transferring a gene into a bacteria. For animals and plants, there's something else, okay? So first you take a gene from somewhere, any plasmid, okay, that has the the desired gene. Then you take a plasmid from any different E. coli here, in this case, any different E. coli or a related species of bacteria, and then you take a plasmid out of that species and use that plasmid as a vector. Now in that vector you integrate the template DNA. You integrate the template DNA into that vector, and then when you integrate the template DNA, what is formed is a recombinant DNA, that is the plasmid of this related species plus the DNA that is the desired DNA that you want. Okay, so now this can be used as a vector, okay, which is the recombinant. The recombinant DNA can be used as a vector which has the DNA from the, you know, Salmonella typhi, as can be depicted here. And it also has the template DNA that we require, okay? The blue, black and the green, red part that you've marked here. Okay, now that entire thing is put into the E. coli, that is the host organism, okay? So introduction of the identified DNA into the host organism. And the last thing is maintenance of introduced DNA in the host organism and transfer of the DNA to its progeny. Meaning, you introduce this to the host organism, the recombinant DNA into the host organism, and see to it that it multiplies, it transfers this multiplied DNA into the progeny. Okay, that's it. And it's also important. Fish. Okay, so yeah, we're done. Tools of recombinant DNA technology. Now we know from the foregoing discussion that genetic engineering or recombinant DNA technology can be accomplished only if we have the key tools, that is restriction enzymes, polymerase enzyme, ligases, vectors and the host organism. Let us try to understand some of these in detail. Restriction enzyme. In the year 1963, and I repeat 1963, the two enzymes responsible for restricting the growth of bacteriophage in Escherichia coli were isolated. One of these added methyl group to DNA, while the other cut the DNA. The latter was called the restriction endonuclease. The one that cuts the DNA was called restriction endonuclease. So basically the function of restriction enzyme in bacteria is defense against bacteriophage. And the restriction enzyme, it cuts the viral DNA, that is the bacteriophage DNA, and methyl group are added, and the other enzyme, it adds methyl groups to the DNA of the bacteria itself, okay? So it restricts virus DNA and modifies the own DNA. Therefore, it's called restriction modification system, okay? It modifies its own DNA by adding methyl groups to it, and restriction enzyme cuts viral DNA and does not cut DNA of E. coli, okay? And also remember that restriction enzymes are isolated only from bacteria, okay, that is prokaryotes. The first restriction endonuclease, that is HIND2, whose function depended on a specific DNA nucleotide sequence, was isolated and characterized 5 years later. Okay, its function depended on a specific DNA nucleotide sequence. That's common for all of them. It was characterized 5 years after it was isolated. Okay, it was found that HIND2 always cut DNA molecules at a particular point by recognizing a specific sequence of 6 base pairs. The specific base pair sequence is known as the recognition site or the cloning site, or okay, recognition site for HIND2. Okay, besides HIN2, today we know more than 900 restriction enzymes that have been isolated from over 230 strains of bacteria, each of which recognize different recognition sequences. Okay, so remember that. This comes in snaps, okay? So 900 restriction enzymes from 230 strains of bacteria. And each one has different recognition sequences. The convention for naming these enzymes is the first letter of the name comes from the genus and the second two letters come from the species of the prokaryotic cell from which they were isolated. So restriction enzymes are isolated only from prokaryotic cells. And first letter is genus, second two letters is species. Okay, so E. coli, 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 E. coli in EcoR1, the letter R is derived from the name of the strain, that is the rough strain. Okay, and Roman number following names indicates the order of extraction. I mean the order in which the enzymes they were isolated from the strain of bacteria. Okay, so the Roman number, it gives the order of extraction and the order in which the enzymes were isolated from that strain of bacteria. Restriction enzymes belong to a large class of enzymes called nucleases. These are of two kinds, exonuclease and endonuclease. Exonuclease remove nucleotides from the end of the DNA, while endonuclease cuts at specific position within the DNA. Okay, exo means bahir. So at the end, it cuts nucleotides. It removes one nucleotide. And endonuclease, it cuts at specific positions within the DNA. Each restriction endonuclease functions by introspecting the length of a DNA sequence. Okay, now this is very important. Each restriction endonuclease functions by inspecting the length of DNA sequence. Once it it inspects the length, like goes forward, and then once it finds its specific recognition sequence, it will bind the bind to the DNA and cut each of the two strands of the double helix at specific points in their sugar phosphate backbone. So it'll bind first and then it'll cut strands of double helix. Cut the two strands of double helix at the restriction recognition site. Each restriction endonuclease recognizes a specific palindromic nucleotide sequence in the DNA. Okay, so in it goes about like inspecting the length of the DNA, and then it identifies or recognizes its recognition sequence, which is a palindromic nucleotide sequence in the DNA, and then it binds to that part and it cuts it cuts that part. Okay, and also remember that it breaks the sugar phosphate backbone and it breaks the phosphodiester bonds between the nucleotides. Okay, in the sugar phosphate backbones, of course, there are phosphodiester bonds between nucleotides. Those are broken by restriction enzyme. Okay, EcoR1 was discovered by Arbour, Smith and Nathans. That's one thing to remember. Next. So do you know what palindromes are? These are groups of letters that form the same word when read both forward and backward, example Malayalam, Nitin, as against a word palindrome where the same word is read in both directions. The palindrome in DNA is a sequence of base pair that reads same in the two strands when orientation of reading is kept the same. For example, the following sequence reads the same on the two strands in 5' direction. This is also true if it read in the 3' direction. Okay, so if you read in 5-3' direction, so it's GAATTC, and the other strand also GAATTC. And here, if you read it from 3-5' CTTAAG, you're also CTTAAG. Okay, so the direction in which you're reading it should be the same. I mean the polarity. I don't know what it's called. Okay. Okay. So EcoR1, the recognition site is GAATTC. BAMH1, it is GGATCC. GGATCC. Okay. And BAMH1 is Bacillus amylofecans. Amylolicufecans. Okay, EcoRV or EcoR5, I guess it is, it has GATATC. GATATC. GAT app. Okay, so GATATC. Of course, it's also from E. coli. Okay, so remember that DNA ligase is used for joining the phosphodiester bonds, and between the base pairs there's H bonding, so they bind on their own. And DNA ligase helps only in the joining of the phosphodiester bonds that had been broken up. Okay, restriction enzymes cut the strands of DNA a little away from the center of palindromic site, but between the same two bases on the opposite strands. This leaves single-stranded portion at the end. There are overhanging stretches called sticky ends on each strand. Okay, so there's an overhanging stretch called sticky end on each strand. Each strand has it. Okay, these are named so because they form hydrogen bonds with their complementary cut counterparts. Okay, so vector and foreign DNA, between vector and between foreign DNA. Maybe. Okay, this stickiness of the end facilitates the action of the enzyme DNA ligase. Sticky ends, like, they bind together on their own, but DNA ligase helps in the phosphodiester bond binding. So the stickiness of the ends facilitates the action of enzyme DNA ligase. Blunt ends are present in EcoRV, then HAE3, then there's HIND2, and there's SMA1. Okay, I don't think HAE3 is important, but HIND2 and SMA1 and EcoRV are. Restriction endonucleases are used in genetic engineering to form recombinant molecules of DNA, which are composed of DNA from different sources or genomes. Okay, so restriction endonuclease, they are used in genetic engineering to form recombinant molecules of DNA, which are composed of DNA from different sources or genomes. Okay, when cut by the same restriction enzyme, the resultant DNA fragments have the same kind of sticky ends. Okay, so same restriction enzyme, same kind of sticky ends, and this can be joined end to end using DNA ligase. Done. So foreign DNA comes, then same restriction enzyme cut both foreign DNA and vector DNA at specific points. The vector DNA is the plasmid. Okay, then it cuts, this one also cuts, ligase is joined foreign DNA to plasmid. Okay, then they are joined, and what is formed, that is the vector DNA with the foreign DNA, is called a recombinant DNA. And transformation takes place, meaning the plasmid is put into E. coli, a bacteria. And apart from the plasmid, it also has non-chromosomal DNA. And sorry, plasmid is non-chromosomal DNA, and apart from the plasmid, it has chromosomal DNA also. And then the cells divide, and that is a diagrammatic representation of recombinant DNA technology. You may have realized that normally, unless one cuts the vector and the source DNA with the same restriction enzyme, the recombinant vector molecule cannot be created. Okay, so unless they are both, the vector as well as the source DNA, are cut with the same restriction enzyme, the recombinant vector molecule cannot be created. Cloning vectors. You know that plasmids and bacteriophages have the ability to replicate within bacterial cells. Okay, so plasmids as well as bacteriophages. Wait, plasmid is non-chromosomal DNA, and bacteriophages are virus. Both have the ability to replicate within bacterial cells independent of the control of chromosomal DNA. Okay, bacteriophage, because of the high number per cell, have very high copy number. Okay, you gotta mark this. Bacteriophage, because of the high number per cell, they have very high copy numbers of their genome within the bacterial cell. Some plasmids may have only one or two copies per cell, whereas others may have 15 to 100 copies per cell. The number can go even higher. If we are able to link an alien piece of DNA with bacteriophage or plasmid DNA, we can multiply its number equal to the copy number of the plasmid or bacteriophage. So if we are able to link an alien piece of DNA with the bacteriophage or plasmid, okay, anyway, on the restrictions and the restriction sites and stuff, I mean the recognition sites and stuff. Okay, we just gotta attach or link an alien piece of DNA with the bacteriophage or plasmid DNA. We can multiply its number equal to the copy number of plasmid or bacteriophage. Vectors used at present are engineered in such a way that they help easy linkage of foreign DNA and selection of recombinants from non-recombinants. The following are the features that are required to facilitate cloning into a vector. Facilitate cloning into a vector. Okay, so all these are for cloning only. Not talking about anything else, but cloning. Origin of replication, ORI. This is a sequence from where replication starts, and any piece of DNA when linked to this sequence can be made to replicate within the host cell. It's a sequence first of all, where replication starts, and any piece of DNA when linked to this sequence, can be made to replicate within the host cell. This sequence is also responsible for controlling the copy number. And copy number of which one? Controlling the copy number of the linked DNA. Okay, the foreign DNA that is linked. So if one wants to recover many copies of the target DNA, it should be cloned in a vector whose origin supports a high copy number. Okay, so DNA, it should be cloned in a vector whose origin it should support a high copy number. Selectable marker. In addition to ORI, the vector requires a selectable marker which helps in identifying and eliminating non-transformants and selectively permitting the growth of transformants. Okay, selective markers are which ones? Tetracycline resistance and ampicillin resistance. And these, they help in identifying and eliminating non-transformants and selectively permitting the growth of transformants. Okay, non-transformants and transformants, you know, the ones that have got the plasmid and the ones that have not got the plasmid. Okay, transformation is a procedure through which a piece of DNA is introduced in a host bacterium. Okay, a piece of DNA is introduced into a host bacterium. You will study the process in subsequent sections. Normally, the genes encoding resistance to antibiotics such as ampicillin, chlorampheniclol, tetracycline, or kanamycin are considered useful selective markers for E. coli. Okay, the normal E. coli cells do not carry resistance against any of these antibiotics. Okay, so normal E. coli cell, it does not carry resistance against any of these antibiotics, and once the plasmid is entered in, it shows all the resistance and stuff. Normally, the genes encoding resistance to antibiotics are the ones that are chosen. And which antibiotics? Ampicillin, chloramphenicol, tetracycline, and kanamycin. So then we come to cloning sites. Okay, so selectable markers, they are transformants and non-transformants, differentiate. And then we come to cloning sites. In order to link the alien DNA, the vector needs to have very few, preferably a single recognition site. Okay, cloning sites are also known as recognition sites. They are like the six-letter palindrome. Yeah, six base pair palindrome. Okay, preferably single recognition site for the commonly used restriction enzymes. Prints of more than one recognition site within the vector will generate several fragments which will complicate the gene's cloning. Okay, so more than one is a bad thing because it will create multiple
cut several fragments will be created of the plasmid, which will complicate the gene cloning. The ligation of alien DNA is carried out at a restriction site present in one of the two antibiotic resistance genes. The ligation of alien DNA is carried out at a restriction site present in one of the two antibiotic resistance genes. Okay, so wherever the antibiotic resistance gene, ampicillin resistance, tetracycline resistance for TBR322, okay, wherever they are present, those sites are ligated with alien DNA, okay, the ampicillin resistance of sites, okay, PVU1 and PST1, thoi cloning karte, I mean thoi ligate karte the foreign DNA mutation. Okay, so the ligation of alien DNA is carried out at a restriction site present in one of the two antibiotic resistance genes. For example, you can ligate a foreign DNA at the BAM H1 site of tetracycline resistance gene in the vector PBR322. The recombinant plasmid will lose tetracycline resistance due to insertion of foreign DNA, but can be still selected from non-recombinant ones by plating the transformers on ampicillin-containing medium. Okay, so this is important. The recombinant plasmid, it will lose tetracycline resistance because of insertion of foreign DNA. Okay, but it can still be selected out from non-recombinant ones. What are non-recombinant ones? The ones that, the plasmids that don't have the foreign DNA inserted in them. Okay. Okay, so they can be selected out from non-recombinant ones by plating the transformins on ampicillin containing medium. Okay, now they're already talking about transformins here. Yeah? Selectable marker sato karpahatir transformin and non-transformin. Ekan gela suppose hai. Eka bacteria cell and gela to plasmid. Zalteka already ampicillin resistance and tetracycline resistance yet law. Okay, and jitun motsuna teka yutsuna. So the jitun motsuna to murtola ampicillin medium and al tetracycline medium. Okay, but ata non transformin separate zale selectable makara mue. Ata sage to jagre ulla the transformins. आता ते ट्रान्सफॉर्मन्सच्या मधले रिकॉम्बिनंट वाले आणि नॉन रिकॉम्बिनंट वाले प्लाझमिड आशिले सेपरेट करपा खातीर तू क्लोनिंग साईट्स यूज करता, म्हणजे तू रिकॉग्निशन साईट्स आणि क्लोनिंग साईट्स ते यूज करता. कळ द रिकॉम्बिनंट प्लाझमिड्स दे विल लूज टेट्रासायक्लिन रेझिस्टन्स. आता जर तुवें तो फॉरेन DNA घातला तो ह्याच्याकडे असं BAM H1 असं जाल्यार recombinant ones will lose tetracycline resistance. Okay, म्हणजे ते जो tetracycline resistance उरचो ना. काय आता पहिलं ते उलटं हे सांगा, थोडं आशिल्ले तितून tetracycline resistance नाल्या ampicillin resistance आशिल्लो ते उरल्ले. काय आणि मागीर तुका ते मिडियमान घालपाक येताले, म्हणजे tetracycline नाल्या ampicillin मिडियमान, आणि ते मरताली जे नाका ते मरताली. काय आणि जाय ते उरताले. कळ पण हांगा उलटे असा, हांगा जे तुका जाय पळय त्याचे टेट्रासायक्लिन रेजिस्टन्स गेला. कळ जाल्यार जर तुवें ते आतां टेट्रासायक्लिनान घातले जाल्यार ते जाय ते मरतले. जाल्यार तुका दुसरो येता मेथड, आनी त्या मेथडाक कितें म्हणटात, रेप्लिका प्लेटींग. रेप्लिका प्लेटींग जे मुस्लिन म्युझलिन क्लॉथ तो यूज करचो पडटा पळय तो रितू मॅमान सांगल्लो. कळ So the recombinant plasmids will lose tetracycline resistance due to insertion of foreign DNA, but can still be selected out from non-recombinant ones by plating the transformins on ampicillin-containing medium. Okay? Okay, so the transformins that are growing, that are transformins manje jitun asa to. Okay, pahile ata tu tetracycline so he use kela, so tu tetracycline achir ashillo कितें रिकॉग्निशन सायट, म्हणजे BAM H1 यूज केला म्हणून तूं टेट्रासायक्लिनाचेर प्लीट करूं शकना ताका, म्हणजे टेट्रासायक्लिनान घालूं शकना ताका, ना तो ट्रान्सफॉर्मन्स सगळें मरतले. कळ्ळें, जाल्यार तूं ऍम्पिसिलीन कंटेनिंग मिडियमाचेर घालतले टू रिमूव द नॉन ट्रान्सफॉर्मन्स. द ट्रान्सफॉर्मन्स ग्रोईंग ऑन ऍम्पिसिलीन कंटेनिंग मिडियम, दे आर देन ट्रान्सफर्ड ऑन अ मिडियम कंटेनिंग टेट्रासायक्लिन. ओके आता सगळे ट्रान्सफॉर्मर्स कम आहे जिथून भीतर तो प्लाझमिड गेला आणि नाव द्या पोटेंटो मिडियम कंटेनिंग टेट्रासायक्लिन. द रिकॉम्बिनेंट्स विल ग्रो इन एम्पिसिलिन कंटेनिंग मिडियम बट नॉट ऑन दॅट कंटेनिंग टेट्रासायक्लिन. ओके रिकॉम्बिनेंट्स टेट्रासायक्लिनचे ग्रो जाऊचे ना. But non-recombinants will grow on the medium containing both antibiotics. Okay, non-recombinants doniyachar grow jatle. Manje non-recombinants an to gene vachuna BAM H1 site an. The non-recombinants an tetracycline resistance jate silence jauna. Okay, so recombinants will grow in ampicillin containing medium but not on that containing tetracycline. But non-recombinants will grow on the medium containing both the antibiotics. In this case, one antibiotic resistance gene helps in selecting the transformins, whereas the other antibiotic resistance gene gets inactivated due to insertion, insertional inactivation, insertion of alien DNA, and helps in selection of recombinants. आता selection of recombinants इच्छे यांगा सांगू ना, पण तीने सांगले जसे, सगळे असे एका प्लेटवर घेतात आणि मागीर एक म्युसलिन क्लॉथ घेतात जिचेर टेट्रासायक्लिन हे दोडला म्हणजे टेट्रासायक्लिन वखद घातला आणि ते तेजेर तेकयतात कळ्ळें. आणि मागीर पळयतकूच तुका कळटा की खंयचे मरतात आणि खंयचे मरनात. सो मागीर तुका ते जागे कळटा ज्या जाग्याचेर आमकां मरता ते वाले हे आसा आणि मरना ते वाले हे आसा कळ्ळें. दॅट्स इट. हो नमस्कार. Okay, so now we have PBR322, E. coli cloning vector. Okay, so it's an E. coli cloning vector, PBR322, showing restriction sites that is hind 2, ECOR1, BAMH1, SAL1, PBU1, PST1, CLA1. Okay, so ECOR1, CLA1. Hind 3, they are at one side, so multiple cloning site, that is one multiple cloning site. Tetracycline resistance 1 has SAL1 and BAMH1. Okay, so tetracycline resistance is selective marker and all these are cloning sites or recognition sites. Then at ROP, what is ROP? ROP codes for the proteins involved in the replication of the plasmid, okay? ROP, it codes for the proteins that are involved in the replication of plasmid. If you don't have the ROP, then replication of plasmid won't take place. So if there's an insertion at PVU2, then ROP will be lost. Then next to it we have ORI, then next to it we have ampicillin resistance part, which has PVU1 and PST1 recognition of cloning sites. Okay, so PVU2 lose its ROP, then PVU1, PST1 lose ampicillin resistance. Okay, so lose ROP means won't produce proteins involved in plasmid replication. BAMH1 and SAL1 lose tetracycline resistance. PBR322 is plasmid Bolivar Rodriguez. ORI decides copy number, decides number of replications. Vector with high copy number should be chosen. And gene of interest plus the ORI. So gene of interest plus ORI. Gene of interest is binds with ORI and forms recombinant DNA. Next, transformation is plasmid entering in bacteria or a piece of DNA entering in bacteria is basically transformation. Transformant bacteria with plasmid. Transformant has antibiotic resistance. Okay, that can be used to select it out. And also remember that PBR322 is an artificial vector, that is a human made vector. And there's another vector, it is called PUC8, that is also an artificial vector. Okay, next we come to insertional inactivation by chromosome, I don't know, what is it called? Chromogenic substance, I don't know, yeah, maybe. Selection of recombinants due to inactivation of antibiotics. So here it was, back there it was inactivation of antibiotic resistance.
Okay, is a cumbersome procedure because it requires simultaneous plating on two plates having different antibiotics. Okay, so it involves simultaneous plating on two plates having antibiotics that are different. Okay, therefore, alternative selectable markers have been developed which differentiate recombinants from non-recombinants. Okay, alternative selectable markers that differentiate recombinants from non-recombinants on the basis of their ability to produce color in the presence of a chromogenic substrate. Okay. So alternative selectable markers have been developed which differentiate recombinants from non-recombinants, so not transformants and non-transformants, but recombinants and non-recombinants on the basis of the ability to produce color in the presence of a chromogenic substance. In this, a recombinant DNA is inserted within the coding sequence of an enzyme beta-galactosidase. Okay, so a recombinant DNA is inserted within the coding sequence of an enzyme beta-galactosidase. So the coding sequence of beta-galactosidase is called LacZ gene. Okay, that part of the DNA is called LacZ gene. Okay, so it is a coding sequence of an enzyme beta-galactosidase. It codes LacZ gene codes for beta-galactosidase. Okay, this results into the inactivation of the gene, which leads to inactivation of the enzyme, which is referred to as insertional inactivation. Okay, then the presence of a chromogenic substrate gives blue colored colonies if the plasmid in the bacteria does not have an insert. So the presence of a chromogenic substrate, a substrate meaning what is put later. Okay, so X-gal is the chromogenic substrate, okay, chromogenic substrate or substance which is put into it. Okay, there's a medium of all the bacteria in which some are inserted with the some are inserted with the gene at the coding sequence of enzyme beta-galactosidase, and some are not, meaning some are recombinants and some are non-recombinants. Okay, and when all of these are put into X-gal, the chromogenic substrate, then some show the blue color and some do not. So which ones show the blue color? The presence of a chromogenic substrate gives blue colored colonies if the plasmid in the bacteria does not have an insert. Okay, it does not have an insert, meaning beta galactosidase is present. Okay, so beta galactosidase plus X-gal gives blue color. Okay, which is of no use, meaning these ones which are blue color, they have not been inserted by the foreign gene at the beta galactosidase. Therefore, beta galactosidase has not been inactivated, and beta galactosidase plus the X-gal, that is chromogenic substrate, gives blue color. Okay, whereas the others that give white color. Okay, the presence of insert results into insertional inactivation of beta-galactosidase, and the colonies do not produce any color. These are identified as recombinant colonies. Okay, so the ones in which there's insertional inactivation taking place when the insert or the foreign DNA is inserted at the beta-galactosidase coding site. Okay, then beta-galactosidase is inactivated, that is not produced, and X-gal alone without beta galactosidase, it does not give a blue color, but it gives white color. So this one, the white colored one, is of use to us. Okay, these are identified as recombinant colonies. Okay, so the white ones are recombinant colonies and the blue ones are non-recombinant. Vectors for cloning genes in plants and animals. You may be surprised to know that we have learned the lesson of transferring genes into plants and animals from bacteria and viruses, which have known this for ages. Okay, we have learned the lesson of transferring genes into plants and animals from bacteria and viruses, which have known this for ages. How to deliver genes to transform eukaryotic cells and force them to do what the bacteria or the virus wants.
Okay. To deliver genes to transform eukaryotic cells and force them to do what the bacteria or virus wants. For example, Agrobacterium tumefaciens, a pathogen of several dicot plants, is able to deliver a piece of DNA known as tDNA to transform normal plant cells into tumor and direct these tumor cells to produce the chemicals required by the pathogen. Similarly, okay, so before that, first let's write this down. Okay, so bacterium, right? Agrobacterium tumefaciens, that one has a PI plasmid that delivers the DNA, tDNA into plants, that is dicot plants basically, which converts plant cells into tumor cells. Okay, so this one, Agrobacterium tumefaciens, is for dicot plants. For human beings, we have a different one. So similarly, retroviruses in animals, okay, not human beings, animals, have the ability to transform normal cells into cancerous cells. A better understanding of the art of delivering genes by pathogens in their eukaryotic host has generated knowledge to transform these tools of pathogens into useful vectors. Okay, so transform the tools of pathogens into useful vectors for delivering genes of interest to humans. The tumor-inducing plasmid of Agrobacterium tumefaciens has now been modified into cloning vector, which is no more pathogenic. So tumor-inducing TI plasmid is converting to a cloning vector, which is no more pathogenic to the plant, but is still able to use the mechanism to deliver genes of our interest into a variety of plants. Okay, so it does not deliver the tDNA, but it delivers genes of our interest. Okay, similarly, retroviruses have also been designed and are now used to deliver desirable genes into animal cells. So once a gene or a DNA fragment has been ligated into a suitable vector, it is transferred into a bacterial, plant or animal host where it multiplies. Okay, so similarly, retroviruses, they have been designed and are now used to deliver desirable genes into animal cells. So once a gene or DNA fragment has been ligated, it is transferred into a bacterial, plant or animal host where it multiplies. Okay, so we got it. Vectors, there are different kind of vectors. First one is for prokaryotes. Okay, vectors, plasmid, which has 0.5 to 8 kilobase. A bacteriophage, lambda, which has 9 to 23 kilobase. Cosmid, which is 30 to 45 kilobase. Bacterial artificial chromosome, or BAC, which has 50 to 300 kilobases. Then yak, or yeast artificial chromosome, which has 1000 kilobase to 1 megabase. Megabase is 10 raised to 6. Okay, now what retrovirus does is it has RNA. Okay, so it undergoes reverse transcription, forms the DNA, and then attaches its DNA to the host. Of course, right? Animals have DNA, right? Yeah. Next, you come to the competent host for transformation with recombinant DNA. Competent host methods, meaning making the host competent, you know, to take up the the recombinant DNA. Okay, for transformation with recombinant DNA, meaning for the entering of recombinant DNA into the host. Since DNA is a hydrophilic molecule, it cannot pass through cell membranes. Okay, why? So in order to force bacteria to take up the plasmid, the bacterial cells must first be competent to take up the DNA. So DNA is hydrophilic, meaning water-loving molecule, so it cannot pass through the cell membrane. Okay, in order to force bacteria to take up the plasmid,
we need to force the bacteria to take up the plasmid. The bacterial cell must be made competent to take up the DNA. This is done by treating them with a specific concentration of divalent cations such as calcium 2+, so calcium chloride and stuff can be used, which increases the efficiency with which DNA enters the bacterium through the pores in the cell wall. Okay, recombinant DNA can be then forced into such cells by incubating the cells with recombinant DNA on ice, followed by placing them briefly at 42 degrees Celsius, that is heat shock, giving a heat shock, and then putting them back on ice. This enables the bacteria to take up the recombinant DNA. Okay, so recombinant DNA can then be forced into the cells. Okay, first they are treated with calcium 2+ ions, and then they are forced, recombinant DNA is put together with the cell on the by incubating the cell with the recombinant DNA. Okay, both of them are put on ice, followed by heat shock at 42 degrees Celsius, and then putting them back on ice. So both together, recombinant DNA as well as the cell, okay, the bacterial cell or any cell that has to be transformed with the recombinant DNA. This enables the bacteria to take up the recombinant DNA. So basically, you are remember bacteria and recombinant DNA. This is not the only way to introduce alien DNA into the host cell. In a method known as microinjection, recombinant DNA is directly injected into the nucleus of an animal cell. In another method suitable for plant cells, cells are bombarded with high velocity microparticles of gold or tungsten coated with DNA in a method known as ballistics or gene guns. Okay, so for animals we have micro injection, animal nucleus. Okay, and gene gun or ballistics is for plants. Okay, now here they haven't mentioned dicot or monocot. Dicot is only for Agrobacterium tumefaciens, which is disarmed vector that is used. Okay, going too far. Then, and the last method uses disarmed pathogen vectors, okay, which will, when allowed to infect the cell, transfer the recombinant DNA into the host. Okay, disarmed pathogen vectors, which when allowed to infect the cell, they are allowed to infect the cell. Okay, now that's an important point. Transfer the recombinant DNA into the host cell. Okay, instead of transferring their poisonous or viral DNA, they transfer the desired DNA. Okay, that's how it is designed. Now that we have learned about the tools for constructing recombinant DNA, let us discuss the process facilitating recombinant DNA technology. Okay, so for once, let's summarize. DNA is hydrophilic molecule, that's what you learned. Then bacteria is forced to take up the plasmid. So there are different methods by which the pores are made. There's electroporation. There's electroporation is like using electricity to make pores. Okay, then giving shocks, heat shocks and stuff, and then putting them in specific concentration of treating them with a specific concentration of divalent cations such as calcium 2+, okay, calcium chloride, that can be used. Then after that is done, the pores are done, then bacteria along with the recombinant DNA, they are incubated on ice, then they are which is followed by placing them briefly on 42 degrees Celsius, giving them a heat shock, and then putting them back on ice. This enables the bacteria to take up the recombinant DNA. This is not only the only way, but in animals there's another way called microinjection, wherein the recombinant DNA is directly injected into the nucleus of an animal cell. In another method suitable for plants, what is that? There is ballistics or gene gun, in which the cells are bombarded with high velocity microparticles of gold or tungsten that are coated. Okay, so the microparticles are of gold and tungsten, and they are coated with the DNA. Oh, I didn't know that. So see, until now you thought that the DNA was coated with the gold or tungsten microparticles, but microparticles of gold or tungsten, they are coated with the DNA. And this method is known as ballistics or gene gun. You're shooting plants, but you're injecting human beings. Okay, Oh, that's like the current environmental status. And the last method to transfer the recombinant DNA, which is using the designed pathogen vector, meaning the vector is allowed to infect the cell, but instead of the vector's harmful gene, what is transferred is our desired gene that we want in the plants. Okay, it transfers the recombinant DNA into the host. Whew. So the main thing is micropipette or microinjection is used for animal cells or animal nucleus, and gene gun or biolistics is used for plant cells. Processes of recombinant DNA technology. Recombinant DNA technology involves several steps in specific sequences, such as isolation of DNA, fragmentation of DNA by restriction in the nuclease, isolation of a desired DNA fragment, ligation of the DNA fragment into a vector, transferring the recombinant DNA into the host, culturing the host cells in a medium at a large scale, and extraction of the desired product. Okay, so I'm gonna mark these and count the number of steps that are linear. So there's 1, isolation of DNA, 2, fragmentation of DNA by restriction endonuclease, 3, isolation of desired DNA fragments, 4, ligation of the DNA fragments into a vector, 5, transferring the recombinant DNA into the host, 6, culturing the host cells in a medium at a large scale, 7, extraction of the desired product. So there are 7 steps in total. Let us examine each of these steps in some detail. Isolation of the genetic material. We call that nucleic acid is the genetic material of all organisms without exception. Be nucleic acid, either RNA or DNA. In majority of organisms, this is deoxyribonucleic acid or DNA. In order to cut the DNA with restriction enzymes, it needs to be in pure form. So you need only DNA, okay? Free from other macromolecules. Since DNA is enclosed within the membranes, we have to break the cell open to release DNA along with the macromolecules such as RNA, protein, polysaccharides, and also lipids, okay? We have to break the cell open to release DNA along with other macromolecules. Okay, so breaking the cell... What all is there with DNA? There's RNA, there's proteins, there are polysaccharides, and there are also lipids. Okay, this can be achieved by treating the bacterial cell or plant cell or animal cell tissue with enzymes such as lysozymes for bacteria to break down peptidoglycan. Okay, cell wall of bacteria is made up of peptidoglycan. To break down peptidoglycan, we have lysozyme. Cellulase in plant cell and chitinase in fungal cell. You know that genes are located on long molecules of DNA intertwined with proteins such as histones. Okay, now this is important, that genes, they are located on long molecules of DNA intertwined with proteins such as histones. Okay, so the RNA is also to be removed by RNAs, and proteins are also to be removed by proteases. So the RNA can be removed by treatment with ribonucleases, whereas proteins can be removed by treatment with proteases. Other molecules can be removed by appropriate treatments and purified DNA. So RNAs and DNAs occur over there. And then purified DNA, ultimately it precipitates out after addition of chilled ethanol. This can be seen as collection of fine threads in the suspension. So we have purified DNA. Okay, that is precipitated out after the addition of all those substances and after the addition of chilled ethanol and fine threads in the suspension. Okay, and then they are removed by spooling. Okay, DNA that is separated out can be removed by spooling. That is with a spoon kind of thing. Also, transposons are genes that jump from one chromosome to another. Cutting of DNA at specific locations, restriction enzyme digestions are performed by incubating purified DNA molecules with the restriction enzyme. Okay, so each restriction enzyme has its optimal conditions that are to be provided, and the all the DNA is incubated with the restriction enzyme at the optimal conditions for that specific enzyme. Agro shell electrophoresis is employed to check the progression of a restriction enzyme digestion. Okay, DNA is a negatively charged molecule, hence it moves towards a positive electrode, anode. The process is repeated with the vector DNA also. Okay, so both of them undergo the process, that is even the foreign DNA as well as the vector DNA. Okay, so the process is repeated with the vector DNA also. That's what I mean. Okay, next we come to the process, that is separation and isolation of DNA fragments. The cutting of DNA by restriction in the nucleus. Okay, first it is cut. Okay, restriction in the nucleus. It results in fragments of DNA. Okay, now they are fragments of DNA. These fragments can be separated by a technique known as gel electrophoresis. Okay, so on what basis do they want to separate? On the basis of size. They want the smallest size to enter the vector DNA, right? So the cutting of DNA is by restriction endonuclear. It results in fragments of DNA. These fragments can be separated by a technique known as gel electrophoresis. Since DNA fragments are negatively charged molecules, they can be separated by forcing them to move towards the anode under an electric field. Okay, so electric field is used. Okay, through a medium or a matrix. Nowadays, the most common matrix used is agarose, which is a natural polymer extracted from seaweed. And do you remember which seaweed? The two that start from G, the Gracilacea or I don't know, Gelidium, I don't know. Both are brown, I guess. So sorry, that's a mistake. They are not brown, they are green. Green algae, okay? So the most common matrix is agarose, which is a natural polymer that is extracted from seaweed. The DNA fragments separate or resolve according to their size through the sieving effect provided by agarose. Okay, size, that is the smaller one moves forward. So the part where you put in the fragments, that part has thicker segments. Okay. So what provides the sieving effect? Agarose gel. Okay, hence the smaller the fragment size, the farther it moves. Okay, look at the figure 11.3 and guess at which end of the gel the sample was loaded. Of course, the one that has more larger elements. Okay, so there are four wells. One side has larger DNA bands and the other side has small DNA bands. A typical agarose gel electrophoresis showing migration of undigested, that is lane 1, undigested lane 1, meaning they haven't moved out, and digested set of DNA fragments, that is lane 2 to 4. The separated DNA fragments can be visualized, okay, so not anything else, but visualized. Visualized only after staining the DNA with compound known as ethidium bromide. Okay, staining with ethidium bromide followed by exposure to UV radiation. You cannot see pure DNA fragments in the visible light and without staining. Okay, staining, you can see bright orange color bands. Okay, so bright orange colored bands of DNA in an ethidium bromide stained gel exposed to UV light. So the separated bands of DNA, they are cut out from the agarose gel. They are cut out from the agarose gel and extracted from the gel pieces. The process of extraction, like cutting them out and then extracting, is known as elution. The DNA fragments purified in this way are used in constructing recombinant DNA by joining them with cloning vector. Okay, so these fragments of DNA, they are used in constructing recombinant DNA by joining them with the cloning vectors. Oh, I get it. Okay, so then we come to that next process. The process is repeated with the vector DNA also. Okay, so this is not only for the foreign DNA pieces that we have, but is also for the vector DNA. Okay, the joining of DNA involves several processes. After having cut the source DNA as well as the vector DNA with a specific restriction enzyme, the cutout gene of interest from the source DNA and the cut vector with space radar. After having cut the source DNA as well as the vector DNA with a specific restriction enzyme, the cutout gene of interest, okay, from the source DNA, so I need to mark this, that is the cutout gene of interest from the source DNA and the cut vector with space, okay, the vector with the space that is left for the gene of interest. They are mixed and ligase is added. Okay, so mixed and ligase is added. Okay, this results in preparation of recombinant DNA. Done. Okay, so at the side we've given enzymes that are used. Lysing enzyme. For lysing meaning breaking. So breaking of the cell and stuff. So bacterial cell breakdown is lysozyme, fungal cell is chitinase, plant cell is cellulase and stuff like that. And then there's cleaving enzyme, which is cutting nucleotides, that is exonuclease and endonuclease. And restriction endonuclease is an endonuclease, which acts as molecular scissor. When joining enzyme, we have DNA ligase that is developed by. Next, we come to amplification of gene of interest using PCR. Amplification is multiplying, like increasing in number. PCR stands for polymerase chain reaction. In this reaction, multiple copies of the gene or DNA of interest is synthesized in vitro using two sets of primers. Okay, primers are small chemically synthesized oligonucleotides that are complementary to the regions of the DNA and the enzyme DNA polymerase. Okay, and we also have base pairs, right? Like the nucleotides. Okay, so the enzyme, it extends the primer using the nucleotides provided in the reaction. Okay, so third thing that is provided is nucleotides. So DNA polymerase, it extends the primers using nucleotides provided in the reaction and the genomic DNA as a template. If the process of replication of DNA is repeated many times, segments of DNA can be amplified to approximately billion times. That is 1 billion copies are made. Okay, if they are repeated many times. Okay, such repeated amplification is achieved by the use of thermostable DNA polymerase isolated from bacterium Thermus aquaticus. Okay, so thermostable DNA polymerase, that is Thermus aquaticus, which remains active during the high temperature induced denaturation of double-stranded DNA. Okay, high temperature induced denaturation, okay, of the double-stranded DNA. The amplified fragments, if desired, can now be used to ligate with a vector for further cloning. So the amplified fragment, okay, there's the fragment that is amplified. So you gotta remember, the amplified fragment, if desired, can now be used to ligate with a vector for further cloning. Okay, also remember that PCR was developed by Carrie Mullis in 1985 in Eppendorf tube. Okay. Next, you gotta just remember this, that first process is denaturation, that is done at 94 degrees Celsius, wherein it is heated, the DSDA, double-stranded DNA, is heated, and both the DNAs, they separate. Annealing is taking place at 54 degrees Celsius, in which a primer is added. Okay, so new strand, takes place when the primers extend, right? So the primer is added for annealing. The primer is added at the 3' end, so the lower end. Okay, small piece of DNA that is complementary to the template DNA. That's one thing you gotta remember. And the extension is the next step, which takes place at 72 degrees Celsius. First one was 94 degrees Celsius, second one is 54 degrees Celsius, third one is 72 degrees Celsius, which is extension. Okay, addition of base pairs or addition of nucleotides. Here, TAC polymerase is used. Polymerase meaning joining substance, right? So either TAC polymerase or Wnt polymerase, which is from Littoralis bacterium, is used. TAC polymerase is from the bacterium Thermus aquaticus. And so DNA polymerase, TAC polymerase, plus deoxynucleotides. Okay, and the extension takes place from 3' to 5' end in both the strands. And the the original DNA fragment, it acts as a template. Okay, and then it is amplified to almost a billion times. So polymerase chain reaction, each cycle has three steps: denaturation, primer annealing, and extension of primers. Okay, next we come to insertion of recombinant DNA into the host organism. There are several methods of introducing the ligated DNA into recipient cells. So the ligated DNA is to be entered into the recipient cell. Recipient cell, after making them competent to receive, take up the DNA
present in the surrounding. So the recipient cell is made competent. Okay, it's made competent to receive. Then they take up the DNA present in the surrounding. So if a DNA meaning the plaster and stuff like that. So if a recombinant DNA bearing gene for resistance to an antibiotic ampicillin is transferred into E. coli cell, the host cell becomes transformed into ampicillin resistant cells. If we spread the transformed cell on agar plate containing ampicillin, only transformants will grow. Okay, the transformants are the ones that have the ampicillin resistance, that have the plastids with the ampicillin resistant gene. Okay, they will grow, and the non-transformer or the untransformed recipient cell will die. Since due to ampicillin resistant gene, one is able to select a transformed cell in the presence of ampicillin. So one is able to select the transformed cell, meaning the one select the cell which has the plastid or the D gene, okay, in the presence of ampicillin. So the ampicillin resistant gene in this case is called a selectable marker. So since it is ampicillin resistance is used to find out the transformants and a non-transformed ampicillin resistant gene, in this case is known as selectable marker. And remember that the ampicillin resistance gene is known as the selectable marker. The gene is known as. Okay, so we're done with this part too. Obtaining the foreign gene product. When you insert a piece of alien DNA into a cloning vector and transfer it into a bacterial, plant or animal cell, the alien DNA gets multiplied. In almost all recombinant technologies, the ultimate aim is to produce a desirable product. Hence, there is a need for recombinant DNA to be expressed. The foreign gene gets expressed under appropriate conditions. The expression of foreign gene in host cells involved in understanding many technical details. Okay, so basically the host with the recombinant DNA plus the suitable environment helps the desirable protein to be expressed and the desirable protein to be produced, and it is produced only when the recombinant DNA is able to be expressed. Okay, so for that we need a suitable or appropriate environment, like appropriate conditions. Okay, after having cloned the gene of interest, so we clone the gene of interest, and then we have optimized the condition to induce the expression of the target protein. Okay, it is cloned and all the conditions are optimized. Okay, one has to consider producing it on a large scale. Okay, can you think of any reason why there is a need for large scale production? Of course, for the large growing population, right? If any protein encoding gene is expressed in a heterologous host, it is called a recombinant protein. So it is not produced in the original organism, but in a heterologous host, in an other host. Okay, it is called a recombinant protein. The cells harboring cloned genes of interest may be grown on a small scale. The cells that harbor the cloned genes, they can be grown on a small scale, that is in a laboratory or in large cultures. Okay, the cultures may be used for extracting the desired protein and then purifying it. So extraction of the protein and then purification of the protein by using different separation techniques. Okay, so you know what a recombinant protein is? A protein that encoding gene that is expressed in a heterologous host. The cells can also be multiplied in a continuous culture system wherein the used medium is drained out from one side. Okay, multiplied in a continuous culture. First thing is continuous culture and the other one is different. Okay, so first here we have continuous culture system wherein the used medium it is drained out from one side while fresh medium is added from the other to maintain the cells in their physiologically most active or log or exponential phase. Okay, so they maintain the maintain the cells in the physiologically most active, that is the log or the exponential phase. This type of culturing method produces a large biomass. Okay, this one has a large biomass, which leads to higher yields of the desired protein. Small volume cultures cannot yield appreciable quantities of products. To produce in large quantities, the development of bioreactors
where large volume in the sense 100 to 1000 liters of culture can be processed, okay? And bioreactors 100 to 1000 liters of culture, meaning the protein that is required, can be processed, was required. Thus, bioreactors can be thought of as vessels in which raw materials are biologically converted into specific products. The raw materials, so you gotta mark the definition, that is the bioreactors, they can be thought of vessels that in which raw materials are biologically converted, that's what bioreactors, into specific products, individual enzymes, etc., using microbial, plant, animal, or human cell. A bioreactor provides the optimum condition for achieving the desired product by providing optimum growth condition, temperature, optimum growth condition, as a whole, has a get that, right? So all you need is optimum growth conditions. The conditions are temperature, pH, substrate, salt, vitamins, and oxygen. The most commonly used bioreactor, oxygen is very important, okay? Vitamins, salt, substrate, pH, temperature, that are the rest. The most commonly used bioreactors are of stirring type, which are shown in figure 11.7. So stirring type bioreactor, it has the motor on top. Now this is very, very important. You gotta mark a star on both bioreactors. It has a motor on top, then it has a foam breaker, then it has a flat blade impeller, then it has culture broth, and then this sterile air that is passed into one side, then there's acid or base for pH control, then there's steam is for sterilization, okay, and this is for simple stirred tank bioreactor, which is the most common one. Then we have the sparged stirred tank bioreactor, through which sterile air bubbles are sparged. Now this is important, sterile air bubbles are sparged, okay, meaning made. Sparged means made, right? A stirred tank reactor is usually a cylindrical reactor or with a curved base to facilitate the mixing of the reactor contents. The stirrer facilitates even mixing and oxygen availability throughout the bioreactor. Alternatively, air can bubble through the reactor. If you look at the figure closely, you will see that the bioreactor has an agitator system and what is an agitator system? So there's an agitator system, an oxygen delivery system, and a foam control system, a temperature control system, pH control system, and sampling ports. So a small amount of the culture can be withdrawn periodically. Okay, you mark those sampling ports. Now you're gonna describe both of them. Okay, so the sparged stir tank bioreactor, increased surface area for oxygen transfer, is gas entrainment. There are bubbles or dramatically increase the oxygen transfer area, okay? Bubbles increase the oxygen transfer area. Then it has a sparger that goes up and down and, you know, creates the air bubbles. And this air entrainment, of course, you read that. Downstream processing. After completion of the biosynthetic stage, the biosynthetic stage is when, of course, biosynthetic meaning something biological is being synthesized. The product has to be subjected through a series of processes before it is ready for marketing. Okay, marketing is like the final step as a finished product. The processes include separation and purification, which are collectively referred to as downstream processing. So downstream processing, we have separation and purification only. The product has to be formulated with suitable preservatives. Such formulation has to undergo through clinical trials and, as in case of drugs, strict quality control testing for each product is also required. The downstream processing and quality control testing vary from product to product. So downstream processing meaning separation and process purification processing and quality control testing, they vary from product to product. Okay, so basically in the upstream process, we have biosynthetic phase, which has preparation in bioreactor and expression of the gene to produce the protein. And downstream process has, gotta remember this, okay, separation and purification only, remember, downstream processes. But the other steps are in separation, purification, then third is processing of preservatives addition, then preservation of storage, Then we have quality control testing, clinical trials only for drugs, and then we have marketing.
Okay, and proteins can be produced intracellular, that is inside the cell, or extracellular, that is outside the cell, that is in the fluid. So when the bioreactor components are like removed outside, they are different, separated into cells and the fluid.
Okay, summary. Biotechnology deals with large-scale production and marketing of products and processes using live organisms, cells, or enzymes. Modern biotechnology using genetically modified organisms was made possible only when man learned to alter the chemistry of DNA and construct recombinant DNA. This key process is called recombinant DNA technology or genetic engineering. So recombinant DNA technology is also known as genetic engineering. This process involves the use of restriction endonuclease, DNA ligase, appropriate plasmid or viral vector, to isolate and ferry the foreign DNA into host. Okay, ferry meaning drop the foreign DNA into host organism, expression of the foreign gene, purification of the gene product, that is the functional protein, and finally making a suitable formulation for marketing. Okay, purification of the gene product. Sorry, expression of the foreign gene, purification of the gene product, that is the functional protein, and finally making a suitable formulation for marketing. Larger scale production involves use of bioreactors. Done. Great. Now you can like go solve or do some other stuff. Yeah, bye.